comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks. Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on earth. We've got a couple of quick announcements we need to make, and then we'll get into talking with our guests this evening. As always, if you're brand new to the show, you don't know about it, but we have something called the K-Files. It is our free weekly newsletter. And in order to subscribe, all you have to do is go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, click where it says K-Files, and subscribe. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, and there are no strings attached. So we would love to have you, and I think you would love to be among the informed. The members area, those who are members got an email from me talking about some new software we were looking at, and that I said, you know, it looks pretty good to me, and I think it would take our members area to another level. And I asked for your responses, and most of the responses that I've received have said, yes, let's do it. Looks good. I put a link in there where you could look at the software. You could go to their page and look at it. And so we're going to be doing that. And when we start to install and set up this software, it's very sophisticated software. And I don't really suspect that we'll be able, you know, from start to finish, get it set up in one day. I think to do what we really want to do with that software, it's probably going to take us several days. And so depending, I don't know, but perhaps you will experience some anomalies when you try to go to the members area. And you know, off and on, kind of spotty as we work with that new software once we get it. So bear with us, because we will we'll be working on that. So I'll be working on that software, probably starting in the next 2 or 3 days. We'll get started on that, and I think it's going to really, really, really make the members area even better. If it doesn't, we'll go back to what we've got. But I think it will. Also, I've made a change for those who are members, a change in how you can watch the live show. Under the old system, you actually had to log into the members area to watch the show. Now, you can do that, but you can just right there on the main page of the website, click where it says watch, and it will open up the video display, and all it will ask you for is that password for the video. So you know, if you forget that password, then you have to log into the members area and you can find the password. You know how we do that. But you know, if you already know the password, all you have to do is just click on watch and then put the video password in, and you're good to go right there from the main page. It is convenient. And I think it makes things a little bit better. And that's what we try to do all the time, make it better. We'll be back right after this. We live in very interesting times, do we not? Sometimes confusing times. But you know, there was a very wise man who once said, "There is nothing new under the sun." His name was Solomon. And you know, my dad believed that to be literally true. And I can remember him telling me that he believed that every modern invention, automobiles, television, radio, radar, airplanes, everything, every modern invention, he believed, had existed in previous high-tech civilizations. Of course, we're beginning to see evidence of that as more and more forbidden archaeology comes to light. But if the strange things that we're seeing all around us have happened before, perhaps we would be wise to be looking at the records of ancient people. Maybe they can help us understand what's going on, and maybe even what may be coming. My guest this evening is Ron Regeer. Ron retired after 30 years as an aeronautical engineer. He's got more than 40 years involved in researching UFOs, and he's here tonight to talk with us about some of those ancient records in the form of petroglyphs. Ron, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. It's been a while since you were with us.
Yes, it has. Thank you for having me on again.
Ron, how did you? I see that you've been involved in UFO research for over 40 years. How did you move from UFO research to the petroglyphs?
I don't consider that a move.
Glad to hear you say it.
It's about the same thing. It's just a more specialized aspect of it. The petroglyphs tell an intriguing story. Many of them, not, I won't say most, because I haven't seen but a small percentage of them. But many of them tell stories, and it turns out they're stories of the ancient Puebloan peoples, today Zuni and Hopi primarily. And their myths, their legends, their lore tells of flying shields and people interacting with gods from the sky, and how these gods worked with them and helped them become what they are today. How they've lived in different worlds, and this is their fourth world. And in previous worlds, they had these magnificent flying machines, and they flew around and eventually destroyed one another. Their whole country sank beneath the waters, and sounds strangely like Atlantis. And these records, these petroglyphic records, some of them show these flying machines called Patuvotas, and the people and the gods that interacted with them, and that's what I've been researching.
I have a friend out here in the Phoenix area who's been on the show before, and he has said these petroglyphs, people say that they were just drawing some sort of religious symbols or something like that. He said, but he said, you know what I think? He said, what happens when someone sees a UFO today? They grab their video camera or their digital camera, and they try to make a record of it. And he said, these ancient people, they didn't have video cameras. Those rocks are the videos. He said, they recorded what they saw.
Records.
I'm sorry?
They are the records.
Yeah. Okay.
To me, it's amazing that these people had the foresight to write them. Well, their gods actually instructed them to write on the rocks, so that they would be able to name them and describe the boundaries of their land. And so they did as their gods told them to. And so that's how we get some of these petroglyphs right now, is because of this rock writing that they did. And it wasn't, some people think they're just, you know, random scribblings and sort of like prehistoric graffiti. But we've found evidence of pre-production work where they sanded the surface of the stone to get it smooth so it would accept the pigments. Production work where they spent a lot of time putting the pictographs on the stone. And then post-production work where they carefully remove some of the pigment to bring out the underlying rock color to give it more depth and to make it a better representation of what they were trying to show.
Well, now you sent me
random scribblings of a group of people that had nothing better to do. These tell stories, and I'm learning to read those. And right now, I'm sort of a Dick and Jane, but I'm getting there. I'm getting to where I can read more and more of them, and they're an intriguing.
All right, now you sent to me several pictures of these as examples of some of the things that you wanted to talk about here tonight.
Uh-huh.
So why don't we get into some of those and sort of let you describe for us what it is that the story is telling, or, you know. And for those watching on the TV channel, I'll put it up on the screen for you. You tell me which one you want to put up, and I'll put it up, and we'll talk about it.
Let's start with the one I think is called Fleeing.
That was okay.
One of the first ones I sent you this morning.
All right. It's on the screen.
Horseshoe out at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll take a look at that one. This was found in these three panels, the next three, if we can get them up here, are all found in the Goosenecks area of Utah near the village of Mexican Hat. There we go. That's fleeing from the Potavota. Potavota is Hopi for flying shield. And right above the FR in from, you'll see an oval with a little tweak on it. That's a Potavota, or flying shield. In Hopi lore, that's a flying saucer. Their gods rode on them and took people on them. If you look above the OT, about 1/4 screen up, you'll see a little triangle with a recessed bottom on it. That's a bird. And that's, as a matter of fact, there's two little birds there. That means, that's in their writing, means seeking safety. You know, birds, when they're flying, are seeking safety. The little man figure above that, he's got his ears down, and that indicates either a man or a small group of people, since it's fairly small, who are not alert. His ears are down and relaxed, just as animals' ears are down. To the left of him, we see two sets of deer footprints with their dew claws showing. That means to flee. And it's heading towards, from the man, directly towards a natural indentation or hole in the rock. And that's a place to hide. And if we were there, as I was standing there looking at this panel, off to the left, there's a deep canyon. So this tells us there's this flying shield is coming. The man wasn't paying attention, and he fled seeking safety to this hole. Now, this is the first panel of three panels on what I call, and it's no meaning, no disrespect, but I call it catch and release rock.
Okay.
Let's go to the next one, which shows the dragon or the flying serpent. Remember that one?
No, I don't have that one.
Okay, that's the title of that one's Captured.
Oh, okay.
Let's get that one up there.
It's up there now.
These are all the same rock. Now, it's interesting when I had a gentleman tell me about that, knowing my interest in UFOs and petroglyphs. And he said, well, it's about a mile off on a dirt road, and it's a rock all by itself, and it's about, oh, it's just a great, these things are about 4 foot tall. You can't miss them. Well, turns out it's 8 miles off the dirt road, and there's many dirt roads. It took me 4 hours to find this one. Then with a bunch of other rocks, these figures are about 4 inches tall, not 4 foot tall. Later on, he admitted he was, it's about 20 years ago when he found this. This one is called, I call Capture. It shows a man who's a member of the Mountain Lion Clan. And we see that because he's got his clan symbol there, the right above the PT, the Mountain Lion footprint. The four small dots with the big dots. It's a Mountain Lion footprint. We see a bird, again, seeking safety. That's between the man and the Mountain Lion down below. It's a little triangle there. There's also a bird attached to the man's foot, which means he is seeking safety. Above him and touching him, just slightly touching him, is a serpent. You can see its wiggly body, and it came from around the corner of the rock, which means it literally came from behind. And then the two arcs on the serpent's head indicate the serpent was moving and taking off. Now, the man's, note the man's arms are hanging down or pointing down, meaning he maybe believes he was punished. You know, it's like a little kid shrugs his shoulders and hangs his head and puts his hand down, his arms down, and his lack of hands show he was defenseless. You know, so he doesn't have hands, he can't defend himself. So we have the man in the first panel fleeing from this Patavota, and then here he's fleeing again, but he's unsuccessful, and he's captured by this flying serpent. The third panel on this same rock, now this is a big rock, it's about 8 foot by 8 foot by 8 foot, and that was the one we call Returned, and that's the third panel on this rock. We'll get that one up here in a moment.
It's up. You're just seeing, you can go ahead and talk about it because people are seeing it at different times.
Okay, now this one shows the man who's, you see two spirals on the left. Now the lower spiral is a closed spiral. It's coming, it shows the coming down, and it's indicated by downward, and what happens is it's closed, meaning he didn't make it down, and you can see between them and the spiral is a serpent, which means that he was blocked. The serpent blocked his way. Again, his hands are down, meaning he was punished. Circle is a large spiral, meaning it's it came a long way down. The concentric circles indicate holding. They were held for some time, but a serpent barred their way and it's positioned beneath their feet, showing that they were stopped from returning. The middle figure of those three figures is not all there. And that's a spirit. You know, it's like the spirits aren't quite all there. And so we have to go back to look to see what's going on. And there we see the other spiral, which is above it, the first spiral, which is open-ended, which means they came down. So this, to me, says it's a star person. Again, see the two arcs on top of this. The middle figure's head indicates moving, holding the hands of the two people, meaning he's assisting them in their return. So it's here we have people who were captured by the serpent, who tried to get down, who could not get down, but later on, with the help of the star person, were able to return back down. So I find this set of panels extremely intriguing because we have a chronology here, a complete story of a person or group of people, and we see in the last panel it's probably a group of people who were fleeing, captured, and then returned by a star person. I just find this whole set of three intriguing. They're all in one rock about 3 hours from my home.
Okay, so this rock taken together tells a complete story,
right.
And it's very interesting. The spiral, as you said, is pointed downward, which means they were coming down. and I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Jeff Woolline, but Jeff has said here on the show, and then I've confirmed it with a Native American shaman, if the spiral is pointed down, it's like a portal, or they're coming down to Earth. If it's pointed up, if it's open but pointed up, that's where they're departing from Earth and going back up into the sky.
Right. That's precisely correct. So it's and this just shows it's not a random bunch of scribblings. This one tells a complete story here. And I don't know if you or any of your readers have ever, or listeners or viewers,
all the above.
Terms. Any of your
folks,
people with watching the show, have ever tried this? But this desert patina, the black covering on the soft rock, is extremely hard to chip off, and it takes a lot of work to draw these figures. And it's just not something that's idly done. Like I say, my favorite one of all is a catch and release rock. Do you have the last one I sent you?
Tell me the title of it.
That's the strange disc with the dots all around it and following it.
No, I didn't have time to get that one put in.
Okay. Yeah, that one's Robert Morningstar, a fellow friend of ours. Said, wow, that's a neat one. He said, that shows a flying saucer coming down and chupacabras bending their knees in supplication while the deer and the antelope play. that petroglyph is at Natural Bridges National Park, or National Monument, excuse me, underneath Navajo Bridge. It's I think it's about an 800-foot vertical climb and a quarter mile, so it's a fairly steep descent. Well, the descent's not so bad. It's the getting back up that kicks my fanny. But what's interesting about this one is, as the...
Ron, I hate to do it. We have to step away for break. We'll pick up there when we come back. I'll try to get that one into the software. We'll be back, folks, right after this. And welcome back. My guest this evening, Ron Regeer, and we're talking about these ancient records that show some of the stuff that's going on in our present day. And it's really pretty amazing. Now, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Ron, I'm going to attempt to see if I can, while broadcasting, bring that up, that picture up, the last one that you sent. And we'll see if we can get that up on the screen here.
Okay.
And yeah, there it is. And okay, yeah, it's up there. So let's talk about it. He said it looks like chupacabras running and the deer and the antelope play.
There you go. And again, if you notice, we're talking about the same clan. This is the mountain lion clan. Lower in the lower right-hand corner, there's the two mountain lion clan footprints. The craft, the disc-shaped craft, looks almost like some type of sea creature. But notice it's surrounded, and the line going through it and coming behind it is, yeah, there's some mountain lion footprints, and has got little dots, a series of little dots all around it. That indicates spirituality or godness. So whenever we see a petroglyph that has these dots surrounding it, we're talking about something that is spiritual. And so it's so we've got a spiritual aspect to this craft that's coming down.
Okay, now if you look at this craft, It's got those little dots all around it, and then the dots either going in front of it or behind it. I don't know which is which, but going along that line. But directly under that craft, there are two sets of dots. What is that?
Right. And those dots are probably counting dots. They use those to indicate counts. So we have a group, two groups of five, and then a mountain goat. By the way, mountain goats very, very rarely indicate mountain goats. They indicate movement and other things. You see the mountain goat that's up at the upper right that looks mm-hmm. like it's almost leaning or flying forward with two legs coming down behind it?
Yeah.
I've seen that same symbol in four different petroglyph panels. And I know they're not talking about a slack-jawed mountain lion or mountain goat with missing its two front legs. So it's showing something else. And the reason they use a mountain goat or a quadruped, that one right there, is that it's easy to show direction, movement. The two arcs again on its head indicate movement. And by filling in and changing the body shape, we can come up with many different descriptors. Now, if we go down, we see a very jagged line. It's a solid line that's very jagged. It's, along that line, we have a man symbol. And again, his arms are hanging down, meaning he's maybe ashamed, or if not ashamed, he's feels like he's done something wrong, and he's being punished, and his hands are empty, meaning he has no hands, but he's got a hold of this line, and I'm working on trying to figure out this one. This one I just found last summer, and I've got about 1,000 of these in my collection, and I'm trying to put these together and catalog them and read them, and it's a major effort in cryptography. But
what are these? You have two very alien-looking figures. You have two alien
cobras. Those are the little critters. We've got the counting symbols, and we've got a mountain goat, and we've got two chupacabras. Strange creatures with headdresses, and I'll defer to Robert Morningstar's referring to them as chupacabras. And they are reaching for these two figures who, notice, are above the mountain lion stroke. So we've got an intriguing set of characters all here related to this godlike UFO coming down. And this panel, by the way, is Natural Bridges National Monument. Under Navajo Bridge, where you walk up to the left under the bridge towards a ruin, and it's on. You have to turn around. It's difficult to see. And on the same general area is a petroglyph of a brontosaurus. I don't know how to explain this unless they're talking about time travel.
So yeah, because you'd have to wonder how did these people that did this petroglyph, how would they have even known what a brontosaurus looked like unless, number one, they actually still existed at the time, or number two, these people had done some time travel and had seen them.
Yes, and it's another one of these mysteries. Remember, the Hopi have gone through three worlds and are in their fourth world now. And I don't know for sure where their worlds changed and what petroglyph records remain from the third world, let's say, and the fourth world. Now, some of these are upwards of 10,000 years old. So we know that they're fairly ancient, and we date those primarily with the things that surround them, the carbon and the fire pits and things like that. The pictographs, I didn't send you any of my pictographs. The pictographs, which are the petroglyphs, let's briefly explain, are where they've scratched out or pecked out in a patina on the stone a symbol or group of symbols, showing, and then by pecking out this outer surface, it's primarily almost always darker, revealing the lighter colored stone underneath.
Yeah.
And these last for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. Pictographs, on the other hand, are where they prepare the surface, smooth it, and then apply a pigment or pigments to the surface of the stone, as in a painting. And some of these are dated about 7,000 BC. So these things are ancient and just intrigue the heck out of me. Do you have the one that looks like a fish inside of a oval?
What's the name of it?
That one, Kevin. That was one of the first ones I sent you this morning. The Three Rivers Potuvota.
I believe so.
Let's take a look at that one. That one's an intriguing one as well.
It's on the screen. You can begin talking about it.
Okay. Now, this one is in Three Rivers, New Mexico. That's an interesting area to me because the Three Rivers site, there we go, has about 21,000 petroglyphs. And these are all in... They're in linear fashion on smaller rocks, whereas most of the petroglyphs I look at are on large panels. It's sort of like they have a huge mural on which they can write their stories. Whereas at Three Rivers, their potuvotas their petroglyphs are on discrete individual rocks, and this makes it quite a bit easier to read because they're it's almost a linear read. Whereas on a panel, they tend to incorporate features of the rock. Now this one is Joe Ben Sanders, an archaeologist, has been studying this. He's the expert on this whole series if you ever want to go to Three Rivers, New Mexico. But this particular one is intriguing. It's got an outer ring that shows it's a potuvota, and immediately within that outer ring is a set of connected arrowheads, and those indicate shooting or ready to fight. It's just like, you know, we have a fortification, and then we have in our fortifications we have our weapons at the ready, and so we have these things here with the arrowheads pointing out, ready to fight. Inside the potuvota itself is a set of double lines. That's sort of outlining the fish, if you will. Those double lines indicate good. I'm sorry, I've got a dogfight on my hands right here.
Okay. We'll let you take care of the dogfight for just a moment, and I'll bring you back up on the air here in just a second. Inside of this thing that looks like a fish, there are also a couple of kind of swirls, and I hope you'll tell us about those as well.
Yeah, I plan on that.
Okay.
Here, let me get one. That'll probably calm it down for a while. Okay, yeah, so we've got the two sets of lines, and then there's back-to-back arrowheads. Those indicate peace. Then there's two short spirals. Those short spirals show friendship, as if two men, if you were to get your hands and put one palm up, curl your hands, and then and sort of shake hands. So this glyph seems confusing until we look at the total context. And what I believe this depicts is what you might call an interceptor. It says, we're flying, we're ready for war. We're going to do good. We're here for peace. We're ready to fight, but we come in friendship. About like an interceptor. You know, we fly up our interceptors, and we're ready to do business if we have to, but we're really on peaceful missions trying to keep the peace rather than start it as a fighter or a bomber.
Well, why is this in the shape of a fish?
To me, one of the more intriguing of all of the ones.
Why is this in the shape of a fish?
I think that's just the way they fit it inside the Pala Tuvota. It's a set of three triangles, or five triangles, the two triangles, and then triangles on the side. Those are back-to-back interlocked doubled arrowheads, and those indicate peace. So I think it's he was getting all the elements worked in of war and peace and friendship, with the double lines indicating good, and it turns out to be sort of in the shape of a fish, yeah.
Hmm.
But I think that was secondary more than anything else.
Okay, so now this is supposed to, this whole thing taken together is what we would call a UFO.
Right, the Pala Tuvota is the outer disc. You remember, it's the same shape as the Pala Tuvota on what I call catch and release rock, the oval with the bottom that's a little bit scrunchy.
Mm-hmm.
The same shape, same proportion, same ratio on the another one that shows a Hopi maiden being taken by the star people. I didn't send you that one. That's at Homolovi. The same shape that's on Coal Canyon that shows Masau inside of Pala Tuvota with two helmeted creatures. So we see the same shape as a Pala Tuvota repeated, and every time it's in a story that matches one of the Hopi legends, matches something that's going on.
All right, we have to step away for break, and we shall return in just a moment, so don't go away, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking this evening with Ron Regeer, and we're talking about these ancient petroglyphs that depict what today we refer to as UFOs. And Ron, I've got a question for you. You are 30 years in the business of being an aeronautical engineer. When you look at these petroglyphs, and you see on these rocks things that today we're calling UFOs, do you see any indication that that they are accurately depicting something that is aeronautical? I mean, as an aeronautical engineer.
Well, not from these pictographs. This shape is will work. That's one of the classic UFO shapes, and they're showing it in what we call plan form, where it's you're looking down on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, it would be aeronautically shaped if we were looking down as a plan view, and I think that would work, just as we see the UFOs we most commonly see to kind of identify with UFO. We normally look at them on edge, and that shows it a little bit different shape than if we look at a B-2 bomber edge view.
Mm-hmm.
From the side, then we see looks like a UFO shape there. The plan view, of course, is the classic flying wing. And so from the plan view, yes, these are very much aeronautically shaped. And
I want to make sure that we get this in before we get into the second hour, because in the second hour is when we open the phone lines and allow our audience to call in with their comments or questions. But you sent me one called Star Twins, and I want us to get into that.
Okay.
So describe for us what are we looking at when we look at the Star Twins?
Okay, that's a petroglyph that's down at Newspaper Rock near Monticello, Indian Creek area. And The Star Twins are the ones who Spider-Grandmother put in charge of maintaining the balance of the Earth. And they, one is at the North Pole and one is at the South Pole. And as long as the Hopi remain true to their religion and true to their god Masao, the Earth will stay on its axis and everything will be okay. When these Star Twins leave is when we have troubles. That's when the Earth will shift its axis and the oceans will spill onto the dry land and the dry land will become submerged. And that's in Hopi legend. That's in many other legends. And remember, the Hopi are responsible for maintaining the Earth. And when asked, well, what about 2012? They say, oh, well, that's, we don't do time. Time is Maya. That's our cousins, our ancient relatives, the Maya. And so we know the Mayan calendar is significant at the winter solstice 2012. So is there a correlation? Is the 2012 the Maya when the Star Twins let go? And is that when the Hopi finally lose their traditional values and are no longer able to practice their religious beliefs and the Star Twins leave as Spider-Grandmother told them to? I don't know.
Well, let's take a look at a movie.
That we've got the Star Twins here, and we've got Quadruped, the goat, sitting there looking, and his horns are curved to indicate moving, but they're touching at the end, which means not quite ready to move. And so, and there's a line, a natural incorporation going diagonally between the Star Twins and the observing quadruped. And that, to me, signifies a schism between the two. And so I find this one especially intriguing as well.
All right, I want us to take a look at a movie. And it's a very short little clip. It is from the SOHO satellite. I believe it's from the 29th of April. We have something moving toward the sun. This is in the forward-looking, ahead-looking camera from SOHO. It is from 429, and I want to play it again. It's from 429 of 2010. And then I'm going to show something side by side. All right? So let's see. Let me click the right buttons here, and we'll be able to do that. Okay. Now we're going to show something side by side with your Star Twin picture. All right. What I've done is I've captured a still of that figure in SOHO, and I've zoomed in on it, and it's very amazing. It looks almost identical to your Star Twin petroglyph. And I'm not saying that this is it. I am saying this sure looks almost identical with the Star Twin petroglyph. And nobody
That's
seems
amazing,
to,
isn't it?
Yeah, nobody seems to have quite an explanation for this. But if you look at the Star Twin petroglyph and look at the left side, it's got these two, looks like arms or antenna or something sticking out on that end of it. And then it looks like it's got either rays showing all around the Star Twin, or it's got, maybe those are legs, I don't know. But when we look side by side and we look at this thing from SOHO, it has on the same end of it, which I'm assuming is the front end because it's moving in that direction, these two rays or antennas, just like the petroglyph.
That's intriguing, isn't it?
It is. Now, if you look carefully, at the picture from Soho, right at the back of that picture from Soho, right at the back of that object, there's a little small protuberance sticking straight out the back of it. And in the Star Twin petroglyph, you have the same thing.
Right.
So if it's up there moving toward the sun, it's quite obviously not still at the North Pole or the South Pole. And right now, and folks, you can do research on this. You can find out on the internet. You can do your research, and you'll find out we're having what they're calling an electromagnetic storm or disturbance in our electromagnetic field around the Earth. And that's pretty interesting, because this is happening up near the sun. This thing is going toward the sun. And then at the same time, we're having this electromagnetic storm. And it's not a storm like where there's been a solar flare and we're being hit by that. What's happened is the electromagnetic field around the Earth is very weak.
Yeah, we had a pole shift of about a tenth of a degree with the Haitian earthquake. Now, one of the problems we're having is, we're having a lot of earth problems. We're having major earthquakes that happen maybe more frequently than we've had in the past. I'm not an earthquake specialist. I don't know whether we're having more or fewer. I do know that it seems to me that for a while there, it seemed like there was a major earth event. Let's just call them earth events, an earthquake or something like that going on almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a small shift in the poles. Now, is all this fulfillment of Hopi prophecy, as they told us in their legends and scribbled on their rocks and wrote on their rocks? I don't know. I can't say, but I do know that...
Ron, we have to step away for break. We'll be back, folks, right after this, and we'll open the phone lines for you. Welcome back, and to those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're talking with Ron Regeer. He is a retired aeronautical engineer with 30 years of experience at that and 40 years studying UFOs, and we've been talking about the ancient people recording what they saw that we call today UFOs. They recorded this, and they recorded it by pecking figures, tiny chisel marks, into rocks, and we call them petroglyphs. And so we've been talking about some of those and some very amazing ones indeed. Now, I want to open up the telephone line and invite you to join us in the conversation. And if you have a question or if you have a comment, we want to hear from you. In the United States and in Canada, we have a toll-free number if you need to call me toll-free. And it is 888-223-4599. Our main number, and this is the one I prefer you use if it won't cost you long distance, and you can call it from anywhere in the world, is 623-444-5889. As always, if you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, I don't have an international toll-free number. So for you, if you don't want to call us, you don't want to make the international call, then you can go to my website and click where it says Flash Message. and you can just type in your question or your comment, and we'll bring it up on the screen, and I'll read it, and provided it has to do with tonight's show, we'll talk about it. All right, let's go to the telephone, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hello, Kevin.
Hello, hello there, Ron.
Hello.
Hello, yes. I have been recently doing a lot of research on our ancient history and origins, and especially I've been reading a lot of Graham Hancock. I've read all of Sitchin's books, and I got to say, you and those fellas really do have a good grasp on our ancient history, quite different from that the mainstream orthodoxy, is trying to... Would want us to believe is our ancient history. Like, they think that Sumeria was the beginning of civilization when in fact it was not.
Okay, do you have a question?
Yeah, I wanted to get his take on this theory, especially when it comes to these gods that are coming back. And this is where I think that they come from. It's that when the cataclysm hit about 12,000 to 17,000 years ago, I think there were probably, I guess you could say, elitists at that time that did have access to advanced technology, and they managed to leave the planet before this cataclysm really did its damage. And when they came back, I think they were surprised to find the survivors. And this is where you get all these stories where the gods came back when they smelled the sweet meats and all that stuff, and that they helped rebuild civilizations. Perhaps they weren't all that alien at all, these gods that had come back, but were perhaps the humans that had access to technology before the last glacial maximum. And helped to restart society about 6,000 to 10,000 years ago.
And your question?
I'd like to know his thoughts on that.
Okay. Intriguingly enough, there may be a tie-in. Do you have the petroglyph, the Coal Canyon petroglyph there, Kevin, that you could put up?
Yes, I do. Give me just a moment to click these buttons.
We'll talk about that while you're getting that up.
All right.
Between the worlds, the Hopi were sent by their god Masau underground, and they were to live underground until they were taken back. Now, while they were underground, they were protected by and cared for by the ant people, A-N-T, like little insects. Now, interestingly, what I found out was the Hopi word for ant is Anu, A-N-U. They have a different alphabet, but it's pronounced as if it were spelled A-N-U. The Hopi word for friend is Naki. So the people who cared for the Hopi in their transition while the world was undergoing these cataclysmic changes, the seed of civilization was cared for by Anunnaki, ant friends. Is this one of them here depicted on the screen, the Coal Canyon petroglyph? I don't know. But I find it intriguing that the Hopi legend speaks of Anunnaki as Zachariah Sitchin speaks of the Anunnaki coming down. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I find it as an intriguing tie-in.
Yeah, I do think there's a tie-in with this. And the Hopi, I've read parts of the Blue Star Prophecy, and it's quite interesting. These, if anybody wants to know the ancient past and also may want to look at where we're going, would you think that the Hopi's prophecies would be a good way to first place to look?
That's a good one. I'm writing a book right now. I hope to have it finished this spring, where I put down a lot of the Hopi prophecies, and I'll include some of my petroglyph pictures there. And it's 2012, The Star People Return is the title of the book. It's about 80% done right now. But I'll speak to these Anunnaki, the Star People, and show some of the pictures of the Star People. You saw one of them in the first, I don't know if you were watching the show then, but the third panel that we showed the Star People returning some Earthlings after they've been taken by a serpent. So, I hope that answers your question, Kevin.
Kevin, thanks for the call. The timer got him, and he's gone. Okay, so the line is open, folks, 623-444-5889, or toll-free at 888-223-4599. So, the Hopi language... when they talk about where they were and who protected them during the last great cataclysm, it's two words for them, but it's Anunnaki.
Yeah, it's ant friends, A-N-T friends.
But they pronounce it Anunnaki.
Yes.
That is fascinating. All right, let's go back to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, this is Mike from Kentucky.
Hello, Mike.
How are everybody doing today?
Good.
Good. Glad to hear it. This book that you're writing now about the possible return of the Anunnaki or the Star People in 2012. There's a lot of rumors going around nowadays that there's the possibility of the pole shift in 2011. Now, how's that going to help anybody if they come back in 2012 after the pole shift?
That's a good question. I don't know. The pole shift, if it happens, would happen in God's time, and whether there's a tie-in with the Mayan calendar. See, again, as I said earlier, the Hopi don't get involved with time. They keep track of the Earth and keep it in balance. And they say that you're worried about time, go see the Mayan. So the pole shift, I don't know when any of this is occurring, and I can't say with any degree of accuracy whose predictions are correct and how timely they are. But I do know that when the Hopi fail to live up to their religion, Spider Grandmother said, the Star Twins will come down from the poles and Earth will shift on its axis and the floods will inundate the dry land. Now, whether that has is the same as the the Mayan time or the 2011, I really don't know.
Well, there are rumors floating around now, suspicions, I guess would be a better way of saying it, that this thing that's happening in the Gulf with the oil rigs may be a result of something doing with this Planet X or whatever that appears to be coming in, and therefore that may have caused the cataclysm out there with the oil rigs.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know anything about that as it relates to the Hopi. I wouldn't say it's impossible, but I can't say that that's what it is.
Well, one of their prophecies that before they came back, was it the sea, the Mediterranean, the Gulf would turn black with, like oil?
Yes, that was one of their prophecies, and that one may have been fulfilled with the Valdez, or it may be happening right now. There were 9 prophecies given to one of the Hopi elders many years ago, and one of them was that the seas would turn black, the sky would turn black, and it... That could very well be. This is part of that fulfillment, but that was just one of the steps leading to the end times and not the end times itself.
All right, Mike, thank you for the call. Very interesting. I was not aware of that about the sea would turn black. That's the first time I've heard that. It's also the first time tonight is the first time I've heard that the Hopi words by which they described the people that protected them during the cataclysm were Anunnaki. That's the first time I've heard that. Back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Victoria from Washington State. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Victoria.
Hi, Victoria.
Great. Listen, I'm enjoying your show tonight, and one of my... one of my great fascinations has been to travel to petroglyph sites, and I'm from Idaho, and all along the Snake River there's just petroglyphs all over the place that are just so indicative of star people and exactly what you've been talking about. But there's one I wanted to tell you about, and I don't know if you're familiar with Lewiston, Idaho, or there's a place up the Snake River from there, about 20 miles, I'd say, a place called Buffalo Eddy, and they have some petroglyphs there that, I swear, you can just tell so clearly that these are UFOs, and these are space beings, and you know, the Nez Perce Indian live in that area, Empire Nez Perce, and they have a myth story of the battle between the ant people and the grasshopper, and I'm thinking, oh, those are the these insectoid type species or something like that, and they're duplicated on the rocks and stuff. But I was taking some pictures there one time, and this is just, I don't have a question, but I wanted to tell you this, which was so fascinating, because I was taking some pictures there. And when I developed the film, this was before digital, but when I developed the film, the rocks absolutely turned into a lava color. I mean, just like they were just glowing orange hot. And I'm thinking, these things are still charged with something, because you could kind of feel that energy there. And
oh, yeah. It's amazing. I'm about as sensitive as a rock, but I can still go some of these areas and just almost, they almost vibrate with the energy of this locale.
Yeah, especially the ones that have, you know, like the really clear ones. I mean, there's some with animals and other things like that, but the ones that are so clearly extraterrestrial stories documentations of something, event that happened in that area. I had a friend take a picture of me, and this whole section of this rock, I mean, these rocks are big. I mean, they're, like, taller than me and all, and they're basalt rock, and they're polished by the river, so they're black and absolutely, like, smooth, almost like a marble, and slippery when they're wet. But, they're black, and these black rocks are just glowing orange, and it's like, you don't see that, you can feel it and sense it, but when the film was developed, there was no sun out. I mean, the sun was behind the hill, so there was no sun or light refraction going into the camera or anything, and nobody can explain it other than, oh, it's just some goofy thing. But my take on that was that these rocks, these areas are just still supercharged. Any comment on that?
I believe you're right. Right out about a quarter of a mile from Catch and Release Rock, as if you saw the first part of the show, I was looking for another panel, and there's a rock about the size of a modest home, and as I'm rounding one face, I very distinctly heard voices, and the voices were, it's sort of like when you're in a cheap motel, you can hear people talking in the room next door or hear their TV, but you can't quite understand the words. I came around the corner, and there's a beautiful alcove that protected from the weather, sandy bottom, no footprints in it, the place was vacant, nobody was there. I heard laughter, two male voices laughing. I went around and said, hey guys, again, nobody there. I've gone completely around this rock. My fiance was sitting in the car watching and laughing about something going on, and there's a lot of energy there. What I'd like, if you could, Victoria, is later on, I believe Kevin's going to flash my contact information up, if you could send me an email going in this, I'd really appreciate it. And I'd like to hear more, but I'd like to open up the lines for some other people. Is that okay with you?
Oh, yeah, I do that. Yeah, I'll even give you directions on how to get there.
Okay,
good luck,
super.
Thank you very much.
All right, Victoria, thanks for the call. Ron, why don't you go ahead and tell people what your email address is?
Okay, it's my last name. It's up there on the screen, Regehr, R-E-G-E-H-R, @ frontiernet.net. Regehr @frontiernet.net.
All right, back to the telephone.
I answer all my emails. And so if you have interesting petroglyphs or an incident you'd like to share or something like that, or just want to chit-chat about UFOs, just drop me an email.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hello, Bob.
Hi there. I had something kind of related that I wanted to bounce off you guys. Lately, in the last few days, if not the last week, I keep getting pulled between about 2, 2.30 a.m., 3 a.m., and I just drive out into these certain spots in the mountains, and every time there's a UFO within 30 minutes. The last one was a red orb, and it went up straight up into the air like a candle really quick out of the atmosphere. I saw the white one that Jeff sees the same day. I saw that the day before, the white one. And I pretty much always know where to go for a UFO every night now. And it's not that it freaks me out, because I'm starting to get used to it. It's the fact that I don't have a camera. And so I wanted to throw out there, if there's anybody in Orange County, Southern California, that has a camera and has the interest to see him right away, please email Kevin, and then I'll email him. And I'd love to hook up and get it on film. I'm really not a photographer, and I'm not into that. But if I see him every night, it's a big thing. And what do you think about the fact that I just know they're going to be there, and by the time I get up there, I sit there just looking off of a cliff, saying, come on. And then when I see him, I say, there you are. And I'm almost smiling. It scares me at the fact that I can feel them around and I can get pulled there. So at first, logically, I wouldn't believe there's any kind of forces with that. But when you look at evidence of everything, other things in the universe and just different incidences, I guess it's a possibility that you can be linked. And I just want to say, when I went out to visit Jeff Woolwine, and I looked at the petroglyphs, he told me that you're now connected and you will start seeing them. 2 weeks later, I saw the first one of my life after 30 years of looking at the sky, and now I can't stop finding them. So I'll leave you with that and see what you guys think. And if there's anybody out there with a camera, please email Kevin, and I'll show you one. Thank you very much.
All right, Bob. Wow. Oh, what about that? Now that you've seen the petroglyphs, you're connected. And
I guess I'm not seeing enough petroglyphs. I'm not connected yet. Darn. I think that's good for me. And my thoughts are there's possibly more going on than Bob is aware of. And let me just leave it at that.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Perry from San Luis Obispo, California.
Hello, Terry. Terry, are you a first-time caller?
No.
Okay.
Ron, I'm curious. The petroglyphs that that we've been viewing, that Kevin's been showing, and all of the ones that you've gathered together to sort of tell this story, are they all from the Hopi people in their lands, or is there any from any corroborating information from other adjoining areas?
The ones I've showed are Hopi, and the reason I know they're Hopi is they talk about Hopi stuff, if you will.
Sure.
I sent Kevin two petroglyphs of Masau, their god, and mm-hmm. we know it's Masau because he's got super big feet. And whenever we see big feet, we know it's Masau. And the reason is, in the Hopi legends, when they were below ground, waiting out the cataclysm, and they knew it was over because they could hear footsteps above them, bouncing on the ceiling. And when they looked, they kept hearing these things, and so they sent up different animals. It's very reminiscent of Noah and the Ark, different birds.
Sure.
And they depicted Masau with big feet because of the stomping overhead. And so that's that, plus others, are direct tie-ins with Hopi legends. Now it's sort of a modern convenience for me to use that term. And I want to make a little bit of clarification because it's oversimplifying to a large degree, and that is that the Hopi traveled, according to their legends, around the world, and as they migrated, they were told to leave their writings, their petroglyphs. They migrated, according to their legends, to the North Pole, the South Pole, over to Tibet, through China, and across the seas, and their swastika, the swastika that the Nazis twisted and corrupted and made into a symbol of evil, is an Indian symbol, and it's a symbol that the Hopi used to show their migration paths. Now, we've all probably, if you've studied Indian lore, you've heard the word Anasazi.
Mm-hmm.
That's really sort of to the Hopi like the N-word is to African Americans. You really don't want to use that word in polite company. The correct term is Hisatsinam, and they are the ancient peoples. They did not call themselves Hopi then. And so when we look at these, even though I say they are Hopi legends, these are legends that go back thousands of years. Some of these may even precede the flood. Some of them may be as old as 40,000 years. And if so, these are in previous worlds of Hopi legend. I use Hopi because...
Ron, we have to step away for a break. And Terry, thank you for the call. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We are talking this evening with Ron Regeer, and we have a caller on hold. Caller, just hang on a moment. Ron, I want you to finish why you use the word Hopi.
I'm sorry?
Finish telling us why you use the word Hopi. You were explaining that when we went to break.
It's primarily because as I read the petroglyphs and compare them with the legends, they match up quite well for this area anyway, with the Hopi legends. And so they don't match any other Native American nation. And so it's Hisatsinam is the term for the ancient ones or the predecessors of the Puebloans. They disappeared from their culture seemed to have dissolved or disappeared about 5,000 years ago, maybe 1,000 years ago, depending on which archaeologist you wish to believe. And they followed a star. It's the symbolism, the concurrent stories of the Hopi and the other major religions of the world just are fascinating and intriguing. They followed a star, they migrated wherever the star stopped, they built a village, and thanks to Gary David, another gentleman you should have on your show one of these days, we find out that these villages replicate the heavens right here on Earth, all the way from New Mexico into California, lay out the villages of the Hopi, and they replicate the stars of the heavens and the major constellations. So, coincidence? I don't think so. Much more accurately than the Great Pyramids of Giza reflect the stars in the belt of Orion. So we the Hopi seems to fit. The legends, the petroglyphs, all match, and that's the reason.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Robert, calling from New York.
Hello, Robert.
Hi. I wanted to ask Ron, I heard his references to the ant people and the grasshoppers, and I wanted to ask him if he thought that there could be a correlation between the grays and the mantises, and whether he thinks it's possible that these legends coincide with modern manifestations of these two types of creatures.
If I understand right, the phone's breaking up a little bit. As Kevin forewarned me, the volume drops considerably between the...
Let me repeat then.
Okay,
let me repeat.
Do
you think that there could be a correlation between the ant people and the grasshopper people in the Hopi legends and our modern reports of gray aliens and the praying mantises or the insectoids?
Yes. The simple answer is yes, I do. I first of all, Robert, I do not believe in coincidences. I think that what appears to be coincidence on our part is lack of knowledge. I know it is on mine, on my part. When I see a coincidence, because I'm ignorant on something, and that's why I want to learn more. And they use the terminology that fits, and they are very, very accurate. Their drawings are accurate. The drawings, I mean the petroglyphs and their pictographs. They match their legends. They match what's going on. And I think the Victoria, I believe it was, talked about the fighting between the ant people and the grasshoppers. Mm-hmm. That sounds to me like the same type of activity we have going on today. And yes, I think it's a direct correlation. And I think we're probably stuck in the middle of this cosmic relationship. And yeah, I do.
And thank you for making that distinction between Anuzazi and the, what did you say?
Hisatkanam.
Hisatkanam.
Yeah, it's a sensitive issue for races. I know for my people are Cherokee, Choctaw, and Chickasaw, and we often get painted with a bad brush, and I think it's important to know that and be aware and sensitive. We don't go around using common terms anymore when it's convenient for us to use because we've heard it before. And
right.
I think it applies to our friends, the Hopi, as well. I think the term has been abused and overused, and it comes from the Navajo. And even to this day, the Navajo and Hopi ethnically are not the best of friends, although there are many individuals who are very close friends. And thank you for pointing that out. I appreciate it, Robert.
Robert, thank you for the call. Very interesting. The telephone number, folks, let me give it to you again, 623-444-5889. You can call that from anywhere on planet Earth and probably from planet X. If you're in the USA or Canada, we do have a toll-free number if you need to call me on that. It is 888-223-4599. And if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada and you don't want to make that international long-distance call, you can go to my website, scroll down till you see where it says Flash Message. Just click on that, and you can send me a message. And we have one from Paul. Now, the one that we have from Paul has to do with the picture that we had up that it was the last one that you sent me, Ron. And he says, hello, guys. The dots are amber orbs, hypnotic kidnapping equipment. True story. So if we look at this, you know, we are seeing a whole lot of orb activity all over the world. And based on the reports that I see, I would say most of them are being reported as being amber or orange in color. So what about that? Is this UFO... dropping off a whole bunch of orbs in the sky?
I don't see anything of that in Hopi legend, but I can't discount it. For one thing, all of the native are reluctant, and for very good reason, to share information with non-native peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And let's face it, we think we got immigration problems now. They've had them for 100 years. So, and they're justified in, I think, being closed mouth. So just because we don't find them in legend doesn't mean they're not there. But I don't see anything of that. I do see orb activity going on here in Utah, especially up in the northern area near the Sherman Ranch that was made famous by Bob Bigelow. And by the way, some intriguing panels up there. And usually the golden or amber orbs have been, according to reports I've received, associated with the reptilians, which would match with our catch-and-release pictographs. So possibly, but I don't see any direct correlation in the petroglyphs that I've studied nor in the Hopi legends that I've been privy to.
All right. That was from Paul in Australia. And we have one now from Humberto in Mexico. He says, I would appreciate if you can ask your guest about, I'll try to pronounce this correctly, Sipapuni. S-I-P-A-P-U-N-I. Sipapuni.
Sipapuni is the hole that's in the religious kiva, and that is the place of emergence for when the Hopi emerged from the underground. They came up through the Sipapuni, the Sipapu, and it's this. There's this. The actual place of emergence is, according to Hopi legend, near the Little Colorado River, near the Grand Canyon, and it's symbolically represented by a hole in the kiva, in every kiva, as far as I can tell, today. And that is their place of emergence, and it's a very highly respected and revered part of their ceremony. So thank you, Humberto, for bringing that out. I did not have an opportunity to mention that earlier.
All right, 623-444-5889 or 888-223-4599. Now, Ron, I want to go back to this Coal Canyon picture.
Okay.
Now, this Coal Canyon picture, because of the shape of the, it's for those who are on radio, this is a humanoid shape. In other words, there's two legs. Two arms, or maybe three, but two arms for sure, a very long neck, and then the shape of the head and the very large eyes make it look very extraterrestrial.
Oh, it does, doesn't it?
It really does.
Maybe what you referred to as maybe a third arm, that's the tail of a large quadruped that's off to the right of it. And it's a story I'm working on. I hope to have finished in time for my book, but right now it's premature. And yes, that same quadruped, that same alien-looking figure, I found it now on three different panels. Intriguing. I don't know for sure whether it's an ant person. It's not a god. It's not a spiritual being. It has feet and it has hands, and you can see its fingers are outstretched, and which means it's definitely a living creature. It's not a symbolic creature, and the big eyes, the skinny neck, the skinny legs, all very, very reminiscent of the alien gray that we see depicted so frequently.
Now, because I've been out looking at petroglyphs a number of times, I know that when you're there and you're looking at it with your eyes, you can see things and distinguish things that sometimes get lost in the camera.
Correct.
So on the top of this figure's head, there's, what is that, a hat? Or is that, what is that on his head?
I don't know. I was intrigued by that as well. I was kind of hoping you wouldn't mention that because I'm ignorant of what that is. So, I do know that it goes into the cleft of the rock, and that's significant, and I don't know what its significance is, but this is not an accident. This was not placed there by accident. As is on the creature's right hand, if you will, there's a portion that looks as if it's been abraded or erased.
Yeah.
And that means destroyed. And that's right on the edge, too. So we have this creature that is touching something or holding something that's from around, that came from around, which is being on the edge, that's what that means, and was destroyed, and he's going, coming from, right, or coming down from that cleft, that grayish, blackish cleft.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back. My guest this evening, Ron Regeer, and we are talking about the connection, really, between these ancient people and us. That's what it really comes down to. It comes down to the fact that they were experiencing a lot of the things that we're experiencing today, and they recorded this in their petroglyphs. And, of course, establishment science looks at this and they say, oh, it's just superstition and they were just scribbling on rocks. And but, you know, it's turning out that's really way off target. These people were recording what they saw and what they experienced, and it's very, very similar to what we are seeing and experiencing in 2010. Ron, this is an amazing collection of photos that you've sent me. And, you know, it's hard to look at these. For me, it's hard to look at these and say it's just graffiti. It's just superstition. Because I can see the progression of the story.
Kevin, is that I have not found a single archaeologist, PhD, that calls it writing. They all call it rock art. And, you know, it's, I'd like to mention the gentleman who's, he's since passed, who got me started. Anybody that wants to learn how to read these, my gosh, I welcome you with open arms. Come on out and we'll learn together. But there's a book titled The Rocks Begin to Speak by Levon Martineau. He was a cryptologist by training, American Indian, a UTE, and he taught himself how to read these. One of the fascinating stories of his interpretation, there's a prophecy rock in Hopi land, and he went to the Hopi elders and he said, look, if I read this rock and tell you what it says, he says, would you tell me if I'm right? And they said, yeah, we'll tell you. But if you get any element wrong, we'll just tell you you're wrong. Won't tell you what. You have to get it all right, 100%, or you're wrong. So he went back and studied it, came back and told them what this prophecy rock said. And they agreed, that's what it said. And he's not a Hopi, but he's Ute, direct neighbors. And yet they would not share with him, even though he was one of the few people in the world who could read these things, they would not share with him what it said, until he told them what it said and they confirmed it. And it tells of their god Masau putting down his bow, because the Hopi are known as the peaceful people, climbing up the reed of life, because when they emerged from the world, they one world to the next, they came up through a hollow reed. And then they had a choice to make one path or another. Those who chose the proper path struggled, but they raised corn and became prosperous, and those who not had a rough path. In it, there's two gourds of ashes, which depict the two world wars and the two nuclear bombs that fell at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And then there's another option for us to make the choice. And again, these aren't just about the Hopi. This is about us, you and me and every one of our listeners. We have choices. And the choice is we can take the proper path or we can take the wrong path. If we take the proper path, we'll have struggles, we'll have hardship, but we'll continue on the path. But if we choose improperly, if we choose the wrong path, it ends. In the Hopi faith, in the Hopi religion, in the Hopi practice, as in most Native Americans, and as in Christianity, the Christian word for sin doesn't mean to do bad. It means to fall short of the mark. It's an archery term.
Mm-hmm.
And it just meant you fell short of the mark. You didn't make it. It doesn't mean you did bad. It just means you didn't make it. And in the Hopi faith, they don't do bad. They just don't remember. And it's our job to remind the people who don't remember to help them get back on the path. Not to punish them for being on the wrong path, but to help them get on the proper path. And that's what the Hopi Prophecy Rock is about. It's about those who strayed, went the wrong way, and about helping get on the right path, which is a good way for us to look at life and is a good way for us to live it. It's been around for thousands of years, folks. That's the message. It's what all this, if we can summarize it, that's what it all means, to help us get back on the right path.
You know, the word sin, S-I-N, in Spanish means without or apart from. For instance, café sin leche is coffee without milk.
Right.
Café sin leche, S-I-N. All right, Leonardo from Puerto Rico wants to know if the orbs seen in ghost pictures have any relation to the orbs in UFO cases. Is the spirit world or spirit dimension related somehow to the UFO phenomena?
It may be. I don't have any tie-in other than this one intriguing petroglyph that Kevin showed that was from Natural Bridges that shows a definite series of dots relating to this one UFO. Are those orbs? I really can't tell you for sure one way or the other. We can speculate. And I prefer not to do that.
Okay.
What I do know is that when we see dots surrounding something on a petroglyph, it means it's holy or sacred. Yeah, that's the one right there that's up there right now. And that's what that means. Now, whether these are orbs like you see in photographs and associate those with UFOs or other spiritual forces, I don't know. I would not say no, but I can't affirm that that's what it means.
Fair enough. All right, we're almost out of time. Very quickly, tell us your email address again where people can get in touch with you.
Okay, it's my last name, Regehr, R-E-G-E-H-R, at frontier, F-R-O-N-T-I-E-R, net.net. Like RegehrFrontierNet.net. And I'll be more than glad to answer any and all emails and any questions that you might be laying awake at 3 o'clock this morning. Say, darn, I should have asked that question. And I'll be more than glad to answer it for you. And if you can't remember my email, RegehrFrontierNet.net, send it to Kevin, and he'll say, consarn it all, but he'll send it on to me. So never fear, we'll take care of you.
All right. Stay on the line with me for a moment, if you will, as I bring this flight of the Starship to a landing. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap for tonight. We've got great shows lined up all week long, and you want to be here for each and every one of them. If you're not yet a member, it's 23 cents a day, $6.95 a month, and you get a ton of stuff for that. But one of the really cool things is you really get to watch the shows live, and you get to see all those photographs we talked about when we have photographs from the guests like that. So if you're not a member, take care of that right now. It's $6.95 for a month. If you do it quarterly, it's a little bit less expensive. And if you do it annually, it's even less expensive. So it's the best deal going. That's a fact. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about military abductions, MILABs. And there's a lot of rumors and a lot of confusion out there about MILABs, but that's what we're going to talk about and see if we can clear up some of the strangeness in the information. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.